Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Well, today's interview with the topic of gratitude comes to you from Ellen Sutherland. She's living in Nova Scotia right now. I met her when she was in Ontario. And Nova Scotia, for those of you who don't know where this is, is way in the northeast part of Canada. And I don't know what they do up there. Maybe Ellen can tell us, but it just seems like Acadian wilderness. Ellen and I have known each other for many years. I don't know how many, maybe over 20, huh? And yes. We met when she wanted to become a Reiki master, and I initiated her. We have spent a lot of the time apart, in other words, not being able to see each other personally, but connecting all the time on other levels. And I'm very deeply grateful for her that she is willing to share a part of her life with Reiki and also a part of her own thought processes around gratitude. As you know, listeners, that we are on a kind of, we're on a series of interviews exploring love, compassion, and gratitude, and all that comes with it. And one of the things that has been really beautiful for me is to notice that each spiritual journey has like a key word that always brings people back to their source. And I really was thrilled to understand that in the Native American culture, from the last two interviews that I've done, that gratitude is a deeply and very important concept for their spiritual practice. So it got me to thinking, well, what is our, and in the sense of Reiki, what is our word, our key piece that brings us to our own inner understanding and guidance? And I don't know if Ellen is going to share this with us today, but it is a question that I have out there, and we'll see. We'll explore that more in the interviews to come. So, Ellen, thank you so much for being a part of this show.
Yes, it's wonderful to be here. It's quite exciting to have this opportunity.
Great.
As you say, we're so far apart physically, and yet here we are, heart to heart.
Right, great.
Yeah.
So, Ellen, could you share with us and the listeners some of your journey to Reiki, how you met Reiki, and yeah.
Sure. Well, in 1985, I kind of stepped into my spiritual path, and I did it through energy work. It started off with therapeutic touch, and it was quite a mystical journey for me, in that it seemed that everywhere I went, there was a purple iris guiding me, this visual, either a potted purple iris or a picture of an iris, and it seemed like everywhere I went in those 5 years, there it was saying, you're right on, this is where you're supposed to be. So I learned a lot about therapeutic touch and polarity, angel work, and I was very happy with it. And then I moved to Hamilton, and all my support that was in Toronto and Oakville was kind of missing, and I thought, well, what can I do? So I went to a workshop, and in that workshop met my my first Reiki master, my first and second degree Reiki master, Kira Galbraith. And I didn't know it. I mean, she was teaching about chakras, I think. And she was, you know, as I say, I'd been in it for 5 years, so I'd been quite enmeshed in energy work. And there was nothing new except she placed her hand on my shoulder at one point and just placed her hand there. And I said, oh, in myself, it was like a flowering. I felt there was a difference in that energy. And I said, oh, and she goes, oh, you're just feeling my Reiki. Because she hadn't talked about Reiki. She was talking about, you know, the energy system in the body. Well, right away, I said, oh, do you teach it? Because I'd heard about Reiki, but I thought, well, I have therapeutic touch. What do I need Reiki for?
Right.
And so I went to her class, and so the journey started. And it was quite wonderful because I would not, 5 years previously, have done anything that had anything to do with an initiation like that. That's how I was, how I saw things. And I felt like I could start my forgiveness process. That's really what happened in the beginning of my Reiki practice, the whole forgiveness process. And so a lot of gratitude, of course, surrounded that, a lot of gratitude. I had all sorts of issues with the church and with using the word God and using the word spirit, and all of those came up in the way she taught Reiki, the way she held it. And it was very helpful to me to just keep releasing and letting it go, you know. That's very helpful. Yeah. So then about 3 years into practice, and Kira had a weekly, which I suggested to her because we had it in therapeutic touch. She had a weekly practice at a local holistic health center. And so every week we go, religiously go and practice giving Reiki. And about 3 years into that, I had taken my second degree by this time, of course, and I had clients. I had quite a thriving client base, and I was teaching meditation. And a friend of mine came to my kitchen with another friend. The three of us ended up at Red Mountain with you, and said, I think it's time we became masters, which never occurred to me. It really had never occurred to me. He was the kind of messenger to say that. And he said, and that means that you could teach, you know, you could teach this. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. Okay. And so that's interesting. You know, and really my whole focus at the time, Phyllis, was healing, and, you know, and it was, I was never that interested in physical healing. I was always interested in emotional and spiritual healing. That's been my draw all the way through it. So, yeah, my focus was on healing, and the thought of initiating other people, you know, started to work inside of me, and that felt really good. So then I met you, and we had this amazing time at Red Mountain with all the other people that were candidates. And then I stepped into a whole other journey. Because in February of 94, you came and initiated me into the next step of the spiritual path, into mastery. And I have incredible gratitude. And frankly, it's a whole walk of gratitude, this whole journey from now on, because I met the most amazing teachers, which were called my pupils and my students and my clients. I just kept meeting myself in all of these wondrous people, parts of myself that I denied, parts of myself that I couldn't admit to or couldn't embrace yet, wondrous strong, wondrous afraid, wondrous healing situations just kept pouring in. And it was an amazing time and an amazing journey of years. And then, so I went along with, you know, many, many wonderful experiences of people. And then I I had a whole other journey happen, which was in 2001. Pretty well everything that could happen in a year happened. I bet you understand a year like this. So I had a, I had a, my half sister died suddenly, totally unexpectedly. She had an aneurysm, died the beginning of the year. My partner decided he needed to go and live in Nova Scotia, and that was in early spring. Somebody stole my car. Somebody ran into the house with a car. I had a theft. 2001 happened in the September.
Huh? Oh, my gosh.
And then I was diagnosed with cancer. And the whole, my whole belief system about Reiki and energy work and healing was brought to the fore. The whole, like, how can I be giving myself Reiki every day and be sick? Blah, 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 blah. On and on and on and on. You know, that whole journey. And so, you know, and I've moved through much of that tonight, 9 years ago. But what seems to have happened, so because everything changed in my life and my business, and I was too sick to do anything, I came out here and moved out here to Nova Scotia with Bauka. And I stepped into a whole different way of holding Reiki. It's like, it's just so wonderful. It's like I became Reiki, if you know what I mean. I stopped thinking of helping others and started holding it in my heart differently. And I started being Reiki and hearing what it was, what the teaching was all about. And it's so, I feel now, all these years down the road, that even though I actually don't have what I used to always have, which is a big practice, it's just diminished over these last 10 years, and it's very quiet. But inside of me, I feel Reiki has grown me to this place of it's an indescribable feeling of being. It's my foundation. It's what I am. It's what pours out of me. It's quite amazing. And so that's where I am with the actual practice of Reiki. It's kind of turned inward. You know, through these 10 years, I had three people come to me, four people come to me, but three decided to take the step to become a master. And that's a whole other journey, an amazing journey. And yet, for my journey, these last 10 years have been like my own Reiki practice, my own Reiki growing me in a very different way, almost like I'm in an ashram. to get that sense of, it's like being in an ashram. And we have two wonderful ashrams here. Pema Chodron is up north, and we have the American, if you like, retreat center of Ramana Maharshi. So it seems to be a place that can hold that kind of energy here.
Huh. Great.
Yeah.
Great. I'd like to go back a little bit to something that you said when you found out you had cancer, and this question about, well, how could this be if I've, you know, been practicing Reiki and all these other things that were supposed to, I guess, keep us clear? And I think that's an important, I'd like to just hear how that was for you and what your answer was. How did you answer yourself?
Well, the answer, like all answers, just keeps growing, doesn't it? Well, at first I had a lot of shame and embarrassment. I thought, how could, you know, how could I be a Reiki master and get cancer? And yes, I smoked for years and but somehow I assumed that giving myself Reiki and taking care of myself in other ways, you know,
right,
good diet, blah, 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 that would take care of it.
Right.
I just assumed that. And, you know, at the same time, there I was with, you know, a pretty serious one. They were quite scary in their diagnosis and then their idea of how long I had to live. And
oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. Well, a small cell, which they, you know, the medical energetic is quite afraid of.
Uh-huh.
But the interesting thing was I had no idea that I had it, and which I found interesting, you know, that I wouldn't have felt that because, you know, I have quite inner hearing, like Reiki talks to me. And
right.
So I didn't feel it. And when I was going through it, in a way, it was like being blind because I also didn't know when it was gone, if it was still there. I just had to do this walk of complete trust, you know.
Interesting.
It was, yeah, really interesting journey. And people all said to me, that for me, the interesting piece was years ago when I was first involved in, you know, stepping into the path, I met a lot of psychics. Seemed to be the time, and they would just come up and spontaneously say blah, 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 blah to me, you know. But three of them said in different ways, I see you as a really old lady, like you're going to live a long time. And it's so interesting when I was really sick, because I had really bad pneumonia too with this whole thing, I kept hearing that, like, don't you worry, this is fine, you're going to move through it. And it predicated a lot of my decisions, which, you know, they wanted me to do much more extreme things and I didn't do it. So at first there was that, oh, how could this be? And feeling a little bit betrayed by Reiki.
Uh-huh.
You know, because Reiki kind of let me down here. And, you know, and Reiki I see as God. I see Reiki as God. So it's like, oh, that can't be. That's not the essence of God. So something else is happening here. Well, if I let myself down. And, of course, you know, people always say, well, the reason you have this illness is because of this and this and this. So, you know, I just kind of let that be and just let it work with me. It came back again. Okay, what is going on? Why is it? Why did this happen? Why? Well, then it came back to me. I was astounded at the love that my students had for me. I was just, Phyllis, blown away. It was astounding. And when I got through chemo, they had this big party for me. And I realized that the only person that was ashamed about what happened was me. They were just fine. And that really helped, you know, that the awareness.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It was wonderful. And, you know, and a lot of family things happened around it. That was wonderful. So then when I came out here, which was not for the end of 2002, I came out to Nova Scotia. Then I had lots of time, as you can imagine. I wasn't my usual busy self. I checked out Reiki around here, and they all seemed to be kind of a very different way than I understood Reiki, and not too open. And I thought, well, I'll just let it be for a while. I went and did a little bit of retreat at an ashram, and then I just had to face it. Okay, I have to really figure out what's going on here. What? I had no idea if I was going to survive this because they kept saying, well, you'll be lucky if you get 2 years.
Wow.
So I had no, so it was this wonderful forcing in a way. forced me to keep going back and looking and being with it, being with it, and being with it. And I am very grateful that I had this experience and that it's still with me. I mean, it's not gone. This experience is still with me. I have scar tissue in my lungs, so all sorts of repercussions that have to be dealt with and faced, and they're not going away. And it's still, it's like growing me. Reiki is just growing me in a different way. I thought it should look this way. I should be always healthy. You know, I'll keel over when I'm 85 or die in my sleep, perfectly healthy, of course. And I won't age. Well, you know, every year you see, no matter how much Reiki you give your body, doesn't it age? It ages.
It ages. It's a bummer, but it ages.
It does. And so I began to see that, you know, it helped keep me open and clear if I was willing to do it and give myself Reiki. And it also was still, it was still dealing with a temporal thing, mm-hmm. which is the body, and the body's going to go. But me, what about me? And me in here is what I was always growing. I wasn't fixing my body. I was releasing my forgiveness issues and my upsetnesses from my life and being in the light. That's where I was always focused. So I began to go back there and let go so much of the body. It just got so body focused for a while. And I started going back to my true heart, my true inner heart, which is, you know, Spirit speaks to me. Reiki's always spoken when I give Reiki, when I receive Reiki. And to just start listening again and forgive Reiki, or forgive myself for being different than, you know, Ellen thought Reiki should be. So I just felt like, you know, I had an idea. I had put it in a box. I put this energetic, which is has no form, in a box, in my idea of what Reiki should be, pushed it through, and it showed me that's not so. That's not so. You have no idea of the scope of me. And so I think that's really the journey I'm on right now. It's incredibly filled with gratitude. But it's the journey of realizing the scope that I am, we all are. It's a biggie.
Wow.
And I think I'm up for it. I feel so strongly that I'm up for it.
That's great. That's great. Well, beautiful story. Thank you for sharing that with us. And it feels that there is, in Reiki, when we practice Reiki, there is always this confrontation of some of our deepest assumptions about life. Like if we do it all perfectly, then we won't die, we won't get sick, we won't grow old. And I don't really know where this comes from. Because it seems that in the Aboriginal cultures, in the native cultures of the world, that age was something that just happened, and that it was honored, it was revered, there was space made for it.
Yes.
There was an understanding that you would go from the womb to childhood to adulthood and back to childhood, and that the tribe would take care of you, and when it wasn't possible and it was the balance of the tribe or the elder, that the elder would then take the responsibility to take themselves off. And since you're living in Nova Scotia, maybe I could say this, that like I was always intrigued with the Eskimo culture, that they would, you know, just wander off in the spring, and knowing that they would, end up on an ice floe somewhere and never be seen again, but having the dignity to be able to decide for themselves. And I just, you know, it's such an amazing way to live. So yes. I don't get how we ended up in this place where our deepest assumption is that the best part of our life is when we're perfect, whatever that means. Yes.
Whatever that means, yes. The best part of our life is when we're perfect. That's really well put. And the other part of that is that perfect means young and, you know, all sorts of whatever your belief system is.
But mostly it's the past.
Yes, mostly it's past.
Yeah, mostly it's past. Especially when you get up to, you know, 60 or so. And for me, anyway, it's like, oh, yes, I'd like my body to be back when I was 40. That would be my perfect time. Of course, when I was 40, I didn't think of my body as perfect.
No.
But now that I have relativity, I'd like to go back there.
Yes.
So funny.
It's all we're dealing with our kind of culture's belief systems. I've always felt that we're kind of adolescent as a people, Westerners, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's how far we are in our social evolution. There's an adolescence to us. And, you know, the way we pushed aside the Aboriginal tribes was very much a young adolescent thing to do. Me first, I want in here. And now we're starting to mature and look back to, you know, the foundation of certainly of Canada and foundation is of a people who loved the land, who lived on the land and who didn't, you know, put a baby toe on the land. I mean, you hardly saw their impact on nature. Mm-hmm. We're not like that at all. That's not the way we are. And people bemoan it, but, you know, even a chipmunk in somebody's attic is something to cause a modern person upset. So we have to find way of growing into our honoring and our gratitude for this beautiful place that we're living in right now, because I feel we're living here to grow our soul or grow the awareness of our soul, and that I have a different sense of this. You know, I don't bemoan the world the way it is. It's kind of like me with my cancer issue. We're going to meet the issue head on or it's going to kill us, you know, and it seems to me that that's kind of the way we need to do it. And you can't make people wise by telling them wise things. We have to kind of evolve into it at our own pace and, sometimes it's the actual situations that push us into looking at those things that we have taken for granted. Mm-hmm. And one of the beautiful ways that happens is through aging. As the body ages, whether you like it or not, it shows you that you're temporal and it shows you that, you know, what is your work? Is your work to keep your body young? Well, you want to keep it viable so you can use it. Or is your work to grow your heart, grow your awareness, grow your gratitude and love and peace? Maybe it's all of it, eh?
Maybe. That's a great question, though. What is your work?
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. there used to be a word that was used a lot, which is called vocation. And it was used mostly for spiritual processes, like to find a vocation meant to know whether you were going to be a priest or a nun or whatever.
Right.
And in some way, there is a call back to vocations, but not necessarily within established spiritual practices. Although we don't rule that out, but when we use the word work in this sense, I just see that also there is this other bridge to this concept of vocation.
Yes.
Like, we go to work to earn our money, but is that really our vocation? And
yes.
One of the things that, excuse me, Reiki brings to lots of people, including myself, is this way of becoming, being pushed into a kind of congruency where work becomes the vocation and the vocation becomes the work. So
yes.
That our spirit is involved.
Yes. In living.
Yeah.
It's not a separate thing anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. That's exactly what I've written a book and just come out last year. And that's exactly what its energy is about. It's about living your spirituality in everyday life,
uh-huh.
Not making it special. And not that there's anything wrong with the bells and the incense and, you know, sitting in your meditation and giving yourself Reiki treatments, but that you step up from that and move into life and carry that energy with you in every aspect,
mm-hmm.
which is a real vocation.
It
it's
is a
real
vocation.
You know, it's wonderfully easy to be peaceful around a bunch of peaceful people.
Totally.
You know, it's just glorious to do that and go there and be with wonderful, peaceful people. And you know, that's not where most of us are called to live. You know, live in a world most people are, you know, living in places with lots of people around them who are not necessarily focused on peace.
Right.
And so exactly. How to emanate it, radiate it, be it.
Well, there is a wonderful phrase that comes to mind, which is a spiritual warrior. And I always used to think that was kind of an oxymoron. Like, how could you be a spiritual warrior? Or, as we would say, warrioress. And it brings to mind a little story of a young woman who I knew when she was born. I knew her mother when she was pregnant with this young woman who is now probably in her early 30s, I guess. And she was raised in the Sufi tradition, and when she was like 18 or 19, it was a few years ago, and kind of the height of the war in Afghanistan and Iraq and so on. And she decided that she would join the army.
God love her.
And her mother, of course, totally freaked out.
I bet.
I freaked out for her, and a bunch of people freaked out. And, you know, she was so beautiful. She just said,
yes, yes.
You know, if I'm not able to go there and live what you have taught me,
yes.
Then what's the purpose of it?
Yes.
And it just, like, some way it made us all very proud. And another way it made me a little ashamed that I hadn't thought of it myself.
Very proud and very humble at the same time. Yes. Yes.
And as far as I know, she's been very successful and in her journey. And I just think, you know, if that's what we're raising in our next generation, then, you know, we have a chance.
Oh, Phyllis, I see. Oh, I feel that I've been given this understanding that this is actually a spiritual renaissance. This is a time of renaissance for the heart. And yes, there are beautiful beings grown at this time in amongst all sorts of other beings. You know, it's not a garden that has the same kind of flower in it. There are many, many different, there are many, many different plants, but, you know, people like your Sufi child who can walk into walk into that energy and hold her own light, because she has no doubt is part of our legacy, I believe, part of our legacy and Grandma's legacy, you know, Grandma Takata's legacy that brought this light in, and we've practiced it and we've grown it, and these wonderful children are growing up around us. Mm-hmm. So I think it's wonderful.
It is wonderful.
And the most powerful thing, you know, what, you know, if you be with love and you be with all the other upsetness, love shifts things so quickly. It just a little bit of love compared to days of upset will shift things. I feel so in need to be aware of the power of love. It's incredibly powerful. It has potency, and we give it off just by being ourselves. Just by being ourselves. We don't have to do anything but just be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to go back a little bit and come to maybe it's an intellectual place, but I don't think so. When we talk about love and we talk about gratitude, I'd like to know what you mean by these words, because I think that we all assume that we are all on the same page, and it's very interesting to have another person's sort of perspective on it. So mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about love, because we were just there?
I think that love is the universal energy. I believe that that's the essence of the divine. And it is thoughtless and conceptless, like pure, powerful love. I don't think we can contain it. It would fry us. And then there's all sorts of like a step down transformer, and we receive potent but dilute love. And I believe that gratitude is an aspect of love. So love is a expression. It goes out. It's like a constant, to use your phrase, Phyllis, a constant song. You know how you say, what song are you singing? Mm-hmm. I believe love is the constant song of the divine, and that we are aspects of the divine, kind of like that. You know that story of the god who wanted to know what it was like to be a cow, and he got into a cow? Have you heard that story?
No.
And he got so enamored with being a cow, he forgot he was a god. And I feel that that's what's happened to us. Every time I give Reiki to a client, I would have this experience of realizing that beneath all the upset, and they all came to me usually with some kind of emotional or spiritual crisis.
Yeah.
I would give them Reiki, and, you know, we would get to this place where there was love. There it was. It's not something we have to grow in ourselves. It's already present, but it's just covered over. So I believe that we're all love in our essence. I have no idea how we got into form. I don't understand that metaphysical part of it. But my understanding is that that's, so love is what we are. And the clearer we get, the more obvious that becomes. I mean, if you're around any of the really profoundly devoted meditators, all you feel from them is this incredible vibration of love. I went and stayed in Ramana Maharshi's ashram, and it just, the walls, everything is soaked in this vibration of healing love. You know, and I would call Reiki love. I know that a lot of people hold it differently. They perhaps hold it differently than that, but I would call Reiki love. So love is healing. Love is, and, you know, people can only accept what they can accept of it. So you can give Reiki to another, and they can receive just what they're able to receive or willing to receive. Gratitude seems to rise up the more love you hold to me. And gratitude, you know, is certainly something to be thought about and to even practice. But gratitude rises up as you begin to realize that everything here in this world is an opportunity to become who you are, to realize who you are, to radiate who you are. And so gratitude just, oh my God, it just starts pouring out. And so I see the practice of gratitude as very, very helpful to cue or to trigger, to help you realize what is already there. It like puts you in that vibration. If you just start saying, it's easy to be grateful for the good stuff. So, you know, I live in a valley. Then in springtime, it's filled with apple blossoms. And it's a very beautiful place to live, Nova Scotia. So it's so easy to feel gratitude rise up. But the real work of gratitude is, can you just touch a situation that you haven't, you thought maybe if that hadn't happened in my life, I would be such a different person and so much happier. Can you go to that place and look at that situation and say, oh, so I am grateful for that. Because of that, I grew this part of me, or I looked at this differently, or now I have great compassion for people in that place. And so I think that gratitude is a very important aspect of love that can be cultured and nourished in us. And, you know, if we could just look at situations in our life and say, you know, could I step into a little bit of gratitude there? What would happen if I said, you know, I had a child die? Who could ever be grateful for that? Who? But, you know, that's what got me into my spiritual path. That event, I had so many psychic things around that event, but that event helped me say, there's something going on here. There is a God or something, because when my son died, I felt him before he died and before the call to say it passed. I felt him be present with me. So I couldn't let that go. And that was my step into spirituality and looking for what's going on in this world. Mm-hmm. So now I can look at that event in truthful, heartful gratitude. It was an event that shifted me from a completely different life. I was going completely different direction, and I can be grateful for that.
Wonderful.
And on, you know. Yeah. So gratitude I just think it's just, you know, be grateful for every living thing is a very wise precept to put in there, because it just makes you mindful of not just the surface, the easy gratitude, but the more, the less obvious things in life that are really life-changing and wondrous for us. We have no idea. Hey, we have no idea what an event will bring us, what
right.
gifts it will bring us.
Right. Well, it just seems like when we project out into the world, that there's this whole mountain of things that are very hard to be grateful for.
Yes.
And maybe a spiritual practice is about, you know, chipping away at that mountain
yes.
that we see. Which, of course, we all have our own mountains, so we all have our own events and ideas
yes.
about what we don't want to be grateful for, I guess.
Yes. Everything but that one.
Right, exactly.
I think I'll skip that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's this wonderful sense when you spoke about love that it was not a kind of mortal, human kind of emotion.
No.
But was something that was perhaps our human longing to go back to the place of love. And
yes.
how we kind of try to find it is through our romantic, sentimental, I'm not, you know, discounting this at all, but it's our pathway back into some place that we've been before. And I
yes,
like that.
And that
like
recognition
that sense
eh?
Of what you were talking about.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was just going to say there's a recognition. There are people that you meet. I have met people who there's a recognition of love like I've never felt love before with them. And it seems that some people kind of hold that key for you.
Uh-huh.
You can really.
Right.
I don't know. It's an interesting thing. Maybe it's an energetic that you recognize in them and instantly feel safe and
right. Well, there's a lot of theories about that. I kind of underline the word theory about mm-hmm. that, where we have our own sort of little, what would you call it, like a little grouping that we have where we are reminded, or where we without our bodies understand this quality to be true, like love. And so
uh-huh.
when we meet those people in a body, then we get to be reminded of that. And then there are people that come to us and present us with our lessons. And so we also recognize
yes.
those people and sometimes
oh, yes.
turn and run at the first sight of them.
Oh my God, no. Yes.
It's an interesting theory, and I kind of like it because through Reiki, what I found is that in this day and age where we meet thousands of people in our lifetime rather than maybe 100.
Yes.
Imagine, like 100, maybe just even 100 years ago, somebody in their lifetime could meet maybe 500 people.
And they were a real traveler.
They were a real traveler. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And now people have more than 100 people on their Facebook. Not that they're friends, especially, but they have contact and they have possibility of expansion. And I don't know. I guess it forces us into expanding who we are as people. And
yes.
Seeing that... that we can overlap these groups and find different groups and find different different stimuli for
and
our
some
own
kind
life.
Of subtle yes. acknowledgement there, that especially the computer seems to have done this acknowledgement that we're energy, because it's just so much a part of young people's lives. They
yeah. yeah.
Wireless world, you know?
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Uh-huh,
yes.
That's
part
amazing.
Of who they are.
Yeah. So I'd like to go back. I have one more question for you. I'd like to go back. When you say that Reiki has talked to you, what does that mean?
Yes. Well.
Yes. It perks my interest, and, you know, and,
does
then
it?
And then it goes away and then it comes back again. And I
yeah.
feel like, I feel like it would be good to explore that just for a minute.
Do you remember coming to Bernie's and at the time, I think you'd just come back from Australia. It must have been 95 or 6. And you were experimenting with putting your hand on a person, giving them Reiki, and writing down what you heard. Do you remember that?
Right, uh-huh.
Well, you know, I needed you to have done that because, no, I mean, my first and second degree teacher constantly pushed me out to the front of, and she had a lot of people in her Reiki life on the Monday nights, to be the one that was hearing Reiki. Like, she kind of pushed me into accepting that I could hear.
Uh-huh.
So when you did that, because then when I met you, of course, that wasn't part of Reiki teaching and I dropped it. But when you did that, it was like a very sweet thing for me because I just allowed it.
Uh-huh.
And so when I put my hands on people, not everyone, I get a story sometimes, or I get words to speak to them, or I get uh-huh. an image of some past event, often uh-huh. trauma, blah, blah, blah. And Reiki speaks to me. So that's the way it was for years and years and years with that part. Then, as I say, when I was sick, it went silent for a while. And then when it came back, now it's like, it's not words. It's an energetic code or understanding. I just hear inside of me, when I'm reading, when I'm quiet, giving Reiki, I just hear a kind of a guidance.
Uh-huh.
And Reiki, I feel like it's Reiki speaking to me.
Uh-huh.
It's inner or higher me speaking. I mean, I don't know if it's a being. It's just been convenient to call it Reiki. Because that's how it was
right.
kind of focused
right.
in
right.
initially for
yeah.
me.
Well, I have to say that this was a little situation that has ended up to be something that I'm very grateful for. So when I first heard that Beth Gray had gone to Australia and introduced this practice of hands-on and then having people write down what they were getting, so to speak,
uh-huh.
because it seemed
uh-huh.
quite common that people would have things come to them. I thought, well, this is not Reiki, as we were taught,
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
I would like to just make this clear to the Australians that this is not actually part of Reiki, which
right.
was a relief. I did that, and it was a relief to some people and not a relief to other people. and then I tried it out because the woman that I was friends with there was very into this, and
yes.
I was very concerned about the sort of ethical ramifications of it all.
Yes.
And so I tried it. I realized I had quite a gift for it. So
yes.
this is very interesting.
I bet you do.
And so I don't teach it in my classes, and I don't
no.
teach it to just people who are come to some of my special groups. But it is an amazing process, and I think for those of you who out there who are listening, if you mm-hmm. listen to Reiki, and I think we all do in our own way,
yes.
then we are able to take it at full advantage of what being in this state of presence brings to us naturally.
Yes.
So, you know, I feel like when we are practicing Reiki, we're in a state of being present in the now, without expectation, without so much agenda. And if we can really do that, which we can after we practice for a while, then what we hear is something that's more of the truth. And I don't know where it comes from, but it doesn't really matter. It just feels
no.
like there's a different kind of hearing and sensory perception that
yes.
comes through our mind. I will say our mind. I don't know if that's really where it comes from, but anyway, that's where I can say it now. So thank you for that clarification
yes.
of listening to Reiki.
Yes.
That's great.
And, yes.
Now
and it gets louder and louder, hey?
Yeah, and yeah. I'm very grateful for it because
yes.
it feels
oh.
like it's an understanding and a definite confirmation that we are more than who we think we are.
Yes. Yes, it's a reassurance. It's a help. Yes, even the feeling of the presence is like a sentient presence is a reassurance at times. That's all that needs to be.
Right. Great. Well, that's a wonderful thought to end with, Ellen. Thank you very
okay.
much.
All right, my dear. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.